Hello, this is Jeff Hajek, and this is the Gotta Go Lean podcast. I'd like to welcome Mike Osterling. Mike's got a pretty interesting past. He spent 18 years working for Square D Company in a variety of roles, but since then, he is the co-developer of the Lean Enterprise Certificate Program at San Diego State University, and he's still one of the instructors there. He's been doing consulting work since 2000, and he's also the co-author of a book, The Kaizen Event Planner. If you're a new person trying to start in a facilitation or a team leader role, I highly recommend this book. You're going to probably jump forward about 2 years in your development just by reading this book and getting the information integrated into how you run your own Kaizen events. So highly recommended. If you need the link for this one, you can find it on the website where you downloaded this podcast. And now I'm going to go ahead and let Mike introduce himself and just say a few words. So Mike, go ahead.
All right. Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity, Jeff, to participate in this podcast. I feel it's always a great opportunity or a privilege to be able to share some of the learnings I've had. As you said, I worked for Square D Company for about 18 years. I started with them in the 80s, worked in a bunch of different roles in the planning and materials management side of the business, was heavily engaged in manufacturing management, worked in five different facilities for them. Some of them were high-volume, traditional, mass production environments. Others were build-to-order, configure-to-order type environments. After my role or after my stint in manufacturing management positions, last 6 years at Square D, I was in a continuous improvement leadership role, which was really unique. It was in the 90s, and Square D was just getting rolling on the lean journey, and so I was fortunate enough to be able to participate in supplier development and getting engaged in a bunch of the different facilities and trying to figure this stuff out. And, of course, we figured it out by doing it, which was I thought it was great because it was better than being given a script and saying, go out there and do this stuff. Much, much stronger learning experience. So that all served as a foundation for getting engaged with San Diego State University and their Lean Enterprise program. I also teach at University of California, San Diego, and they have a similar program. And like you said, I've been consulting for the last 10 years, and it's been pretty neat. Been in a bunch of different environments. I'm a manufacturing guy at heart, but I learned early on that if we're going to make this stuff work on the operations side of the business, we've got to get the support roles and the support functions heavily, heavily engaged in synchronizing our efforts.
Well, that's exactly what the topic was. So Mike and I were talking about a good topic for this. We're thinking about, Mike is in the 90s, most of lean stuff was on the shop floor, and it was really around the mid to late 90s when you started seeing the transition. People started realizing that this isn't just a shop floor tool that applies everywhere. But what you have now is you have a bunch of lean practitioners who, their foundation in lean is really with, the typical standard work shop floor Kaizen, and now they're moving into the office environments. And for some practitioners, it's very difficult to make that transition. They try to apply the tools very precisely, and it just seems like there's something you need to do differently to put lean in place in the office as opposed to the shop floor. So Mike and I were going to talk a little bit about that today. And how do you apply lean in the office environment, without rigidly following the tools the way you would on the shop floor? So Mike, when you go into the office, what's the first, big difference between like an office environment and a shop floor environment that you notice?
It's hard to say what the one first big difference is. I like to think of it as there's differences in the way people behave, the culture, the organizational structure, so kind of people-related issues. There's differences related to the product itself, the widget. Right? The widget looks different, and sometimes we can't even see it. There's process-related issues or process-related differences, how people do their tasks. And there's also differences in performance. How do we measure and how do we monitor the performance of the process, of delivering value to our customer? So really we think about people, product, process, and performance-related issues. And probably the one big difference or the biggest difference is probably I'd have to say cultural and people related and how people look at their jobs.
So, Mike, when you go into the office then, there seems to be a lot more personal ownership of processes. You know, people may have developed these processes themselves, and it's not documented with a support team the way you would have, you know, say a production process on an assembly line where you have a lot of people having, you know, their hands in a pie. How do you deal with the personality issues that arise out of a person who's very vested in the process that they're doing?
I think one of the things that's real important, Jeff, is to try to put yourself in the other person's shoes. And in each one of those, look at the process of change from the perspective of the folks who are doing the job, that are doing the work. And one of the things we need to do is try to take away the fear. People are naturally resistant to change. It happens on the shop floor. It happens in the support and in the office areas. And so if we can somehow minimize that fear, that opens the doors to making improvements. I like to, some of the things that I do to try to minimize that fear include making sure this isn't a backward-looking thing. This is a forward-looking activity. Yes, these things are in place as we go through and turn over the rocks. There might be some silly things that we see. There might be some bad habits that we uncover, but it's not about finding blame and applying blame. It's about, okay, how can we do it easier? How can we do it better? The easier thing is something that I constantly am sharing with the group. What's an easier way to do the job and deliver the quality product that the customer's looking for? I think sometimes people have had experiences where their processes have been re-engineered, and they've been re-engineered by somebody else, and these folks have been stuck with a process that is cumbersome, ineffective, and generally unpleasant. And so by getting the people engaged and making sure that they understand that they're a part of the solution and development of a better process, I think that helps allay some of those resistances.
You know, when you're making changes to a process, especially when it, like, people are vested in, you know, they have to see that. It's you know, so it's like the first point Mike made off the bat. You know, I really agree with that. But one of the things I found is one of these resistances come in the terms of, you know, the way work flows. You know, on the shop floor, you know, you have a tack time and you have a very consistent way that work is kind of metered out to a person. You know, it's at a very steady rhythmical pace. And people have a clear expectation of what's coming in. You know, that rhythm is developed by tack time on the shop floor. But tack time seems to be a concept that's very, very hard to apply to the office environment. And when you try and enforce something like that, you know, a tool that doesn't have that close match, it puts people off and they kind of lose that, you know, that what's in it for me. They don't see how it benefits them. How do you manage that, you know, the variation in demand and some of the unique requirements in an office environment while still maintaining some degree of standardization and an ability to identify abnormal conditions in the office?
Great question, Jeff, and really interesting. And the classic consultant answer here is, it depends. In some processes, it would be totally wrong to look at tack time because it's irrelevant. I mean, we did an annual business plan development process improvement activity a few years back, and hey, we only do that once a year. So you could say the tack time is one per year, or you could say the tack time is one per 2 months if we have 2 months to pull that business plan together. I'm not going to force it. It doesn't make sense to force a tool like that onto every process. And so then we say, okay, what are the relevant tools that we can use to create stability, or be able to react quickly to emerging customer demands? Because some services we're supposed to turn things around in 1 day or 2 days, and we can't forecast it, not accurately at least. We could waste a whole bunch of time forecasting just to know that we're wrong. But so then in those environments, what we try to do is a couple different things. Again, it kind of depends on the situation, the process, the product. one thing we'll do is we'll try to break the services that we deliver into smaller product families. So there might be a product family that it's a make up something. It's a standard order from an existing customer, and it's for a standard service. And so how we react to that, or how the process for delivering that customer requirement, could be very different than new customer, non-standard, it's a custom service that we're delivering to them. So if we can break those down into separate product families, and perhaps, I like to say designate, not necessarily dedicate, but designate resources to those product families. So, hey, I'm the first responder to standard customer orders for existing customers. And so we can isolate some of that variation to that group. It gives us a more predictable response time, turnaround time to those customer needs. We also get into standard work. I mean, just if we can simplify the process, and if we have, instead of five, customer service folks responding to the same request in five different ways, let's standardize that response. Let's standardize the work, and so I've got a more predictable throughput time or delivery time for that service. So don't force the tools. Tack time may make sense in a high volume service or office process, but it doesn't mean it makes sense everywhere.
You mentioned something really interesting here. You start talking about products. It has a different connotation in the office than it does on the shop floor. And the shop floor, you can walk up and you can see that widget. The Widget Max 3000 is, the product I always use when I'm talking about, the mythical product on the shop floor. And you can sit there and watch it and touch it and see what's happening to it along the way. In the office environment, that product is a bunch of ones and zeros. It's a lot harder to look at that when zipping around in, a database or an ERP system or an email. So frequently you're looking at, trying to follow a piece of information. When you go into the process walk and try and track this and really get an understanding of an office process, what steps do you take?
Well, we still do a Gemba walk. If we're doing a value stream map, if we're doing a Kaizen event, that's getting into the details of something. But if it's on a value enabling product stream or service, then we still walk the process, and just, it's amazing what we see when we look. A lot of processes may be a lot of ones and zeros, like you described, but many times there's physical things that surround them. And so it's good to see the silliness. There's still a lot of handoffs. There's still a lot of emails and voicemails that exist that perhaps if we had co-location and things like that, we could do away with. Doesn't make sense in every environment, but sometimes it does. So the product is very different. When the product morphs, it may start out as a request for a quote and then turn into a demonstration, and then it may turn into a purchase order and then an engineering spec. The product morphs on the shop floor. We can see it. In the office environment, it's hard to see, but it's amazing what happens when we get this cross-functional group together and force them all. We're not forcing them. We're enabling them all to see this thing from beginning to end. It's amazing what we see in terms of light bulbs turning on, in terms of, I do that to you. 3 weeks ago, I was in a value stream mapping activity, and the guys in engineering said, I can really see where me saving 5 minutes might cost you over in the drafting group an extra 3 hours. I think I should think about that a little more. And as common sense as that sounds, it's great to see the light bulbs turn on and to see those two folks, both of them, become enlightened to, it's a whole process beginning to end that we need to think about.
The other related light bulb I see frequently is, three people or five people are all doing the same process, and when they actually write it down and they follow the walk together, they go, oh, wait, that's how you do it? And if people are doing the same process, that are all doing it differently. And it's really easy to see immediately how, you know, you're going to get different results when everybody does things differently. But also you can see if you grab the best pieces of everybody's process, you know, it's pretty easy to immediately make some, you know, one process out of those three that's better than any one of them individually. And that's like you talked about, that cross-functional team's power. You know, get a bunch of people together thinking about that and really, you know, working to come up with a better solution.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because one of the things we'll do when we, in addition to the Gemba walk, there's something that I've referred to with teams as a virtual Gemba, exactly mm-hmm. the type of environment you're talking about. But instead of having people write down what they do and how they do a process, some people do stuff in the system. And so we'll get people into the room. If there's three customer service folks that are doing order entry, we'll actually plug their computer into the monitor and let them walk through a transaction. And then we'll get a second person who wasn't observing the first person do the mm-hmm. same. We'll give them the same, you know, dummy order and say, input this order, and we'll watch how they input it. And we'll do that with a third person. And it starts being entertaining when you see three people doing a relatively simple process three different ways. And if you tell people, if we constantly remind the folks, we're trying to do it easier. We're trying to do the right thing, but do it easier. It really opens up their, I think it makes them much more receptive to saying, let's try something different.
I'm thinking about something you said a while back. And one of the things you mentioned was handoffs. And I'm trying to tie this into like the last question, but you know, it's something that's kind of going through my head a few times. So it's really not as related to what you just said, but it is something you talked about earlier. And you mentioned the idea of handoffs. And that's one of those things that, you know, I've always found it to be a little different in the office. Like if you're on the shop floor and you're running, an automotive assembly line, you might have a car moving down the assembly line, and every person on this line adds 60 seconds of work. So when the car goes between two stations, there's not a lot of the startup costs, or, you know, not a lot of startup time associated with that. Every time it comes to you, it's exactly the same. You might have to check what option you put on, but there's not a lot of difference in it.
Right.
When you get a file on your desk, you know, you might have your setup time in opening up the ERP system or, you know, getting the right program set going. But there's also this other piece. It's like the handoff cost that you have to open the file up, figure out who the customer is, think about what it is that they want, and read through it. That's one of those things that I've always found as the challenge in having handoffs, is that there's this additional, you know, cost of starting up on the individual work unit that you're doing. But it goes kind of against this practice of specialization that people like to have. So how do you handle reducing that startup cost and the cost of handoffs in the face of people who have a functional idea of what their job is? You know, I don't do this other process. Does this question make sense to you?
Yeah, it does. And it's actually pretty interesting, because I think there are some analogies. It's not, you know, we can draw some parallels between what happens on the floor and what happens in the office. In the floor, we think a lot about how do we present that work to the next person in the stream, in the value stream, the next process. And in the office, we did, this was classic, it was a build-to-order environment, and we were following just the business transactions, not the actual production of the product, but just the business transactions from the customer calling in and saying, I want X number of these widgets, until the orders input into the system, accepted, communicated to the floor, then we kind of went into a black box. They make it on the floor, then it shows up in the shipping department, and they've got to do their transactions to ship it, and then following it all the way through the receivables, they send out an invoice. And it was pretty funny, because when we followed the paper and we looked at what was happening, at the end of the day, we had this stack of paper, and, you know, it had everything from a schedule request to the purchase order and associated documents. I think we ended up with 6 or 7 different documents. And you looked at this pile of paper, and it was full of it was full of holes from stapler, staple holes. And I said, what's going on here? And it ended up that at almost, not every, but almost every process, people were unstapling. They were pulling the staple out, reordering it so the information that they wanted was on top, and then stapling it back together. And a couple funny things about that. What I'm trying to demonstrate in this answer is that there are some opportunities to present the work to the next party so they have what they need, or they don't have to look as hard for what they're looking for. So that perhaps can reduce some of that startup cost. And the other thing that was pretty funny in this example was, and it made the job kind of easy, was most of that information existed in the system, and we shouldn't have been stapling and unstapling and filing and unfiling because it was in the system to begin with. So some of that setup cost is there. It's truly over-processing because the information might be there in a simpler format.
It's funny, we could sit here and talk about all our little, the Kaizen war stories about things we've seen over the years. But the interesting thing on this is always when you point it out, is you get this different set of eyes from doing a lot of Kaizen. And it doesn't even have to be hundreds like Mike and I have done. Once you do a few of them, you start realizing what to look for. And, the staple holes jump out at you because they're like that abnormal condition or something unusual. But if you get that Kaizen mindset going, just the repetition of doing it frequently, it's a lot easier to identify that waste. You can start recognizing the waste in a handoff where before you may not have seen it. I'm just looking at the time, and I think we probably should wrap things up here now. I've really enjoyed this conversation with Mike. Every time I talk to him, I learn a lot from him. I really enjoy talking about Lean with other professionals who've done a lot. I always walk away with a little bit of extra knowledge that I'm going to go and take and apply. So I just want to say thank you to Mike for coming here. And Mike, you don't want to, Mike does consulting, so he is available. And like I said, you can use the link to get to his site. And he also has his book, and I'll put the link for the book up on the page on my webpage also. And if you want to, take a look at my Lean store, you can grab that and get a copy of it. I highly recommend it for anybody who's been doing Lean. But the real benefit you'll get out of this book is it'll knock 2 years off of your learning curve as you're figuring out how to put together, your own process for Kaizen. So I highly recommend it for people who are starting out on their Lean journey and are trying to develop their own Kaizen processes. And it's called, again, the Kaizen Event Planner, Achieving Rapid Improvement in Office, Service, and Technical Environments. So, Mike, you want to have a final word, and then we'll say goodbye?
I just want to say, go forth, have fun. Jeff, thanks a lot for the opportunity. I always enjoy our conversations, and I always enjoy the additional bits of knowledge, pieces of knowledge that I get from you. So thanks again.
Okay, no problem. And like I said, all this information from the site, from this podcast, will be posted up on the website. And best wishes on your Lean journey.